Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
I'm opening.
We have
an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Okay, welcome everybody. Thank you for joining us for Anatomy of a Movie. This week on the dissection block is Brooklyn, directed by John Crowley and written by Nick Hornby. I'm John Comerford, joined in the studio by Marissa Serafini.
Hello, everyone.
Sarah Stratton.
Hello, hello.
And of course, Dimitri Pano.
Hello, movie fans.
Yes. All right, so Brooklyn, let's jump right in. What did you think? Should it have even been made? Did you like the adaptation? Were you going, what happened? Why did nothing happen? What's up, Marissa?
I liked it. It was a very simple movie compared to every movie during the Oscar season that's like in your face. You're really supposed to feel something. This was a nice, simple movie that made you feel at the heart. It pulled at the heartstrings. It was sentimental. It was relatable, even though it was back in a different time period, but it's still relatable to today. And I related to the main character being, you know, transitioning from like a big place to a small place, or more so a small
being
place
homesick
to a big place. Mm-hmm. So like I understood that, and like as a human I connected to this film. So yes.
Sarah.
So I really, besides the fact that I heard this was a good movie, mm-hmm, I didn't know what the story was right until I saw it. And at first, she's walking around and she's really just sad and depressed and like low. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh no, what did I sign myself up for? A little bit worried. And then the love story really got me. Mm-hmm. I have like just a soft spot in my heart for one, animation movies, and two, like period, like romance stories. Mm-hmm. They get me. Mm-hmm. And this one, I got teary-eyed. I liked this whole like love triangle thing that was happening. I had like a flashback of the Notebook moment. So
another great film.
It really did, like, I connected with it emotionally. I was very interested to see like which side she chose, although the whole time I was like, she's going back. She's going back.
It's called Brooklyn.
Yeah. but I leave it. So the story really got me. And I think I just like kind of how it was written and the things they put in. I left being like, I'm not mad that no one was like acting standouts. Mm-hmm. That's not what the strength of this movie was, mm-hmm, to me. Versus like we just talked about The Danish Girl, where right it was like acting chops or whatever galore. Mm-hmm. But we were like story-wise. This is kind of the opposite, where I wasn't like, wow, these actors are astounding me. But I really enjoyed the story. Mm-hmm. So that's what I have to say.
Yeah, I saw this, the first time I saw this movie, I've seen it a couple of times now, and I saw it in October during one of the, mm-hmm, the one of the conventions that I attend, exhibitor conventions, and it was literally one of the best movies that they showcased, and I really felt that. I felt this movie was beautiful. I felt it was exquisite. I found it to be simplistic in its story, but I felt directing, I felt acting-wise, I thought Saoirse Ronan's performance was
At least that's how I've been corrected.
Well, thank you, Saoirse Ronan. I thought she was absolutely beautiful. I think she carries this movie wonderfully. Emery Cohen as Tony, I thought was fantastic. I thought the performances really worked. And again, this is one of those collaborative efforts where everything, it was beautifully shot. The use of close-up, I felt, Saoirse Ronan's facial expressions said it all. This movie didn't have to rely on dialogue to tell us how a character was feeling. And that's another thing. I felt this movie was about character. From Ireland, coming into Brooklyn, to the woman that she meets on the boat, yeah, right over, who we don't even really get to know, yeah, at all. And I was hoping, but they sort of part ways, to her housemates, I thought were brilliant. And then, you know, the family, the Italian family, the little kid. Like, this movie had so much character going into it. I loved it. And even though the movie was called Brooklyn, it still left me a little bit going. When she left to go back to Ireland, I was like going, she's got to go back, right?
I mean,
she's
like, got to go back.
She's got to go back. And, I just felt that this was an exquisite, beautiful love story. The likes that we really haven't truly seen in a very long time, I felt. Yeah. It really worked for me.
First of all, did anybody read the book?
No.
Okay, so
if you don't know, it's based off a novel by Toybin. I don't know how to pronounce that last name, so I'm sure I just screwed it up, so I apologize.
That's why he said it very quietly.
Exactly. It's like, I didn't get corrected on that one. So I thought the movie, I liked the movie a lot. It was, first of all, I have Irish heritage, and there's no one more Irish than an American who has Irish immigrants and Irish background. So for that part of it alone, I'm going, I love it. So it didn't matter what happened. Oh, we're in Ireland. I'm good. I'm happy. So and then there's the melancholy and the homesickness and the heart sickness for Ireland and all that other stuff. And as I watched this movie and as I finished it, people were asking me about it. I'm going, well, you know, it's kind of like a good poem. Now, first of all, I don't read a lot of poetry, so I don't know why that came to mind, but that's what it felt like to me. I think it was the Irish part of me because of the prose, and I'm just going, yeah, it felt like, because especially now, here's the thing, in a good poem, there's a lot of imagery and you don't always get everything, and sometimes you're reading a poem and, like, okay, I read a poem and yeah, that's it, it's over. Because there's not a lot that really happens in this, but then if you think about it, and then all of a sudden you'll start remembering that imagery and the prose, and it kind of stays with you. And this, for me, this is a movie that kind of stayed with me. It could be because of the heart sickness of it. It could be because of the melancholy. I don't know. Maybe it's just the Irish stuff.
There's a lot of beautiful moments.
Yeah.
And a lot of, like, beautiful Irish moments.
And again, I say, that's why I use the word exquisite, because the way, and to me, it really is a movie about character, whether it's the location or whatnot or the actual characters in the movie. You know, I seeing this a second time.
Mm-hmm. You said three times now?
Twice.
Okay, right.
And seeing it the second time, it even, stuff stood out to me. Again, like, one of my favorite scenes is the scene where they're helping the homeless
people. Oh, right.
You're
going to make her cry.
Where he sings.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to start there. That's
she's already.
Yeah.
But that.
It kills everybody.
It kills everybody. But why? Why does that work in Brooklyn?
Sarah's ulterior.
Well, but let's talk about this for a second.
Okay.
Why? Because in any other movie, it could have come off as pure schmaltz. Because it doesn't have much to do with whatever. But
I think
it was directed.
Yeah, because they pulled back.
And they pulled. Oh, my God.
When they pulled the sound down, and you just got to see with the imagery and the old man. I mean, and the fact that they said these were the men that built Manhattan or whatever,
Brooklyn.
And if you have any sense of history, you kind of go, oh, that's right, we kind of just discarded him, which we've done on many occasions.
Right, and that scene to me, and again, it brings her character in a sense home, and
yeah,
it was a beautifully composed shot scene, much like, I guess, beautiful poetry.
Yeah,
but that's just one example. Mm-hmm. And again, that's why I think it goes above and beyond simplistic, maybe in story, but in its execution is.
Well, let me add to that, because it's always a difficult thing to adapt a novel into a movie because all the different constraints, and it's a totally different medium. Secondly, I haven't read the book, but I've been told by people who've read it, it's a very internal book, meaning, and so that. How do you do that? How do you adapt that into a movie, which is not an internal thing? So it's a difficult challenge to begin with. And you had just pointed out, and so Sarah, about how it's such a character piece, and it clearly is, and it doesn't rely on dialogue or events occurring that are crazy, and it's not like she's been stretched to the ringer back and forth like crazy.
I think that another aspect of why this movie at least thrives for me is the handling of it and how just small things repeat themselves, but their effect is felt. Like when she has, they go to the beach together, her and Tony. And that scene in itself, without connection to before or later, with the swimsuit and we finally see them kiss in the water and like the joy around it, it's so strong. And then when they handle it and they bring it back where she's then in the beach in Ireland and she's the one who has her suit on. Mm-hmm. And it just shows how much has shifted in her life while also, like, recalling the joy of that scene. So it brings back that, like, you want her to be back there. Right. And it just, it tells so much in doing so little.
Right.
And just in that one adjustment and that one thing that is brings you back. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like that was throughout the movie where things weren't, I wasn't like, oh, you're going to bring that back later.
Mm-hmm. You didn't see it telegraphed in any way.
I wasn't like, oh, you're putting this in there. Yeah. And I liked that. And mm-hmm. I thought it was just very delicate and nice and happened frequently.
Right. I get what you're saying. I completely agree. I like what they did in this film is the establishment of both places that she was at. Sure. Ireland mm-hmm. and Brooklyn, how they are literally two different worlds and how they physically and just emotionally set that apart from each other.
And even Brooklyn wasn't Brooklyn. It was Montreal, which was like, amazing.
Like, even setting that for the audience, like, this is what we're supposed to feel at this place and this is what we're supposed to feel here in this country. And I think it was so well established that, like, even the audience were like, let's go back to Brooklyn. Because that's the place where you're happy.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing, too, that for me I found very refreshing in this movie is that if you want to break it down by character, there's only one real, like, quote-unquote villain. Everybody else in this character, in this movie, is very supportive of her, including her boss at the department store, who understands what she's going through. And she even helps her out. Mm-hmm. Her housemates and the house mother. Mm-hmm. Like, all those characters were so fantastic, and they were so fun. I just loved every slice of all these people that we were meeting, and that, like, they weren't being jerks to her, where they could have been, like, we could have had all this different kind of stupid conflict. And then
because a lot of people, that's what the criticism of this film is, not a lot happens, and there isn't there's no antagonist, so to speak,
other than the woman in Ireland.
Two scenes basically, and that's it.
But she's such a cloud.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
Yeah. So that worked for you guys, right? So
it works for me because then, like, in life right now, I don't have an arch nemesis who's out to get me and is destroying everything I do. Right. Unfortunately, sometimes life happens.
But not a superhero nemesis. I'm just talking about somebody who stands in the way of your goal. Just an antagonist that way that you would normally see in a film, because usually, you know, your main character has a goal they're going for. It's an external goal, and as they go for that goal, they find their internal need and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. This doesn't really have that kind
outside
of situation
of
going on.
Herself being that person, stopping
there's
herself.
Usually it's personified in a person. Usually,
you're right,
and so.
I just found it
and it's like her old life is her.
But don't you think it works in the sense that because it's 1952 or 50, whatever it said, 51, 52, I think there's a nostalgia of that time already. And I think because it's set then, you can get away with that where a modern-day audience may be used to this kind of, okay, here's the protagonist, here's the antagonist. Right. Because we're removed slightly, the rules are slightly different.
Think about how easily, and again, I understand it's an adaptation, and I hadn't read the book, but think about how easily, because usually in something, it's a story such as this, right? It would have been the Italian family telling the boy,
you can't.
Exactly.
And that's why she didn't tell her family because he's Irish, he's Italian,
exactly.
You can't. Yeah,
could have gone for those stereotypes, but instead you find that the family is inviting. The little kid, he's a little shit, but he's hysterical about it, and the way they discipline him is great.
He's the smartest one
in the lot. But there is a scene when she was doing her spaghetti with the spoon, and it's just a quick scene to the parents where the mom just looks at the father.
Yeah.
And it's like, see, that...
She's a good one.
And it's, again, it's moments of... It was moments of reaction, it was moments of focusing on where... Dialogue wasn't needed. It was just the raise of an eyebrow, her expression, and it just said everything. And, like, that dinner scene is great.
I think I didn't need also an antagonist because, to me, they made it make sense why she might stay in Ireland. as much as I wanted her to go back to Brooklyn, when she goes back because of her mother, because of, like, she gets a job there, because she has someone else who is interested in her.
Well, to me, the antagonist really is Ireland. It's a home. Yes. It's coming back. It's having what you wanted to have happen when you were at home, but wasn't available to you then. And then when it is, the job, the people paying attention to you, and the finding someone you like, and all that.
Yeah.
So that was enough for me. And, like, if it had ended where she didn't go back to Brooklyn, I would have been heartbroken and very angry at the film.
But, like, I also,
like, would have understood it in a way. Yeah. Like, I would have been like, wrong choice, but, like, I get why you made it. Uh-huh. That being said, I was very happy she went back to Brooklyn. And I'm like,
I don't think I would. I'm in complete agreement with you. I do not think I would have enjoyed this movie. You know, and had she ended up staying in Brooklyn, even though things in Brooklyn looked as if they were going to be almost ideal
It's a different movie ending than in the book. Now, again, I don't know the book ending, so I can't really speak
apparently,
to that.
Apparently, like, the story was supposed to be set in, like, four different movements. Mm-hmm. And basically, you can break it down that way. And the last movement of the film, when she goes back to America, isn't in the book.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, well, and that would have bummed me out.
Yeah, that would have been really more depressing.
It would have been depressing. And somebody could argue, it's more realistic this way. When I watch a love story like this, I don't want realistic. I want her to go back to Brooklyn because this guy was obviously the right guy this is a guy, their dialogue about, I like Italian girls. I'm Irish, but, you know, it's like when he talks.
You really wanted them to be together and stay together. You wanted them to have that life in Long Island. You wanted them to be builders. You wanted the whole thing.
How awesome was that? And that's another great scene. It's like when they have their lot.
Yeah.
It's like, and you realize it's Long Island, but it's all empty. It's like,
whoa.
Oh, wow. They're rich. they're going to be hoity-toity because once that gets all developed. Yeah. But, man, it was just such a nice feeling, and it was I left the movie twice feeling that was just really a very nice movie. It was a great feeling to walk away.
I also felt like it was a movie in which, as an audience member, you could really put a lot on what the characters were kind of thinking.
I think had to.
Yeah, and
I think that's what they required of you.
And I enjoyed that. Yeah. For instance, personally, when I watched the wedding scene in Ireland, and she's watching her friend get married, and you're hearing, I believe it's like the priest, like, talk about their vows and, like, what marriage means.
And you're going, hello?
Yes.
Wake up!
Exactly, and you're just kind of, you're imposing that shift on, like, this is making her decision. And she never... I think that a lot of people assume that religion is very tied into being Irish.
Just a
I feel like that's a common assumption,
but wait a minute, it's not being religious; it's being Catholic. Usually, let's say that.
But there was a lot of Protestant version. But I liked
how that it was a religious element, and it was there. But we never saw, like, I am married and God says that he is my husband, and if you are Irish and believe, I liked that that wasn't a big speech.
No, but you do have a very kind priest getting you a job and he's doing all kinds of things for you.
Yes, exactly. But I liked how that was a theme that was implied and put in there because it is connected to, like, being Irish and in that time.
Oh, and
but
the
it wasn't big speeches about how she should live her life.
And she doesn't
way.
Tell mom about everything until she does. Right. And then she's just mortified by it because, you know, traditionally she should stay home and help mom.
Right.
But no, she's leaving.
Hightailing
it. Yeah, and, you know, it's really – and that scene, too, was like, again, just the way that it was done. And it sort of leaves you like, yeah, well, you know – the boats go both ways. It doesn't mean you can't go visit your daughter and with your husband. Well, it doesn't mean that, you know,
she ain't making a lot of money.
True.
Mom, anyway.
But, you know, it doesn't mean that sometime down the line, she's doing really well for herself. Yeah. And, you know, it sort of kind of hurt when she says, well, don't wake me up. I'm going to bed now.
Yeah. You know, I want to say goodbye once.
Well,
you can see how hard it was the first time. So and she's already said goodbye to her husband and her daughter.
Yeah.
I have to keep saying goodbye.
But it left me with, like, she's never going to see her again.
Well, and I think that's maybe what she had thought.
You think so?
Yeah. And she said enough goodbyes, and she can't suffer the pain of another.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is tragic. And it's very Irish, too.
And it is. And the scene with...
I think you had to be Irish to feel
the
that
scene
pain.
With, yeah. with Jim Farrell, Domhnall Gleeson, mm-hmm. you know, when she he gets the Dear John letter,
right.
essentially.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, you know, him being, you know, he shuts the door and there was a ray of light, but there was so much dust. I mean, his mm-hmm. loneliness was really... personified in that mm-hmm. scene where he reads the letter.
Right.
And you couldn't help but feel bad for him, mm-hmm. but at the same time, she has the life back home.
Right.
Like, he's the guy.
I have to say, that was a scene that I did not like.
You didn't
there, there are two scenes that I thought I would wanted to have seen because I loved the character that they had created, Eyeless, and I wanted her to experience her going through these things. There were two things I think they avoided, and that was, for me, did not work. One, the letter. Two letters. The letter she gets from her husband, and she doesn't read it. She gets it, and she puts it, you know, I don't know about you, but in the theater I was at, when she opens the drawer, and they see a bunch of letters, and the whole audience goes, oh, my God.
Yeah, you know,
they all got this, right?
Like, oh.
And then she's trying to write a letter back to him, and she's kind of, you hear her, what she's saying, mm-hmm. and she goes, what am I feeling? And she goes, oh, I don't know what I'm feeling. And I'm going, oh, yeah, neither do we. It's like, what is your excuse? What is your, you know, what's your rationale? What do you think? And it bothered me, because I wanted to see this character. I wanted to know what she was thinking, or what she would say to him. And I thought, for me, it was too easy to pull away and not share that for me, because I want the character to go through as much struggle as she can, and I wanted to see what she's thinking and feeling at that moment. And the same thing's true for when she doesn't have to face this guy who she's literally fallen, well, let him fall in love with her to some degree, and it's too cheap, not cheap, excuse me, it's too easy for her to just walk away and leave a letter rather than to face him, because we've had such great moments with them in Ireland. I wanted her to stand and to explain what was up. And I just thought, why walk away from those? Those are great emotional moments that you don't get to see.
Right.
It's a letter.
He deserves better than a Dear John letter. I kind of like the fact that we didn't get a conflict also, because it was more situational conflicts that was kind of going against her rather than just individual people.
Why would you take your main character away from that?
I like the fact that we, the audience, didn't really hear his letter that she wrote to him, because it was, like, implied. We kind of knew what was going to happen.
Yeah, because he shared it.
We knew she was leaving, and I don't think they needed to also reflect what we already knew.
Yeah, my whole feeling is
not
that...
But how would she explain what she did? Why she allowed it to go on? I mean, why would you do that? I've been married the whole time, and I, you know, hey, look, you know, sorry.
Well, again, like what we talked about, I think it would have looked down upon mm-hmm. because she didn't get married at a church, technically, yet.
No, but I'm talking about the Domhnall Gleeson. Why wouldn't she explain herself to him?
I just think that she had... You had mentioned literally like 2 minutes ago
adultery.
How they had great... Well, there is adultery, but they had great moments together. I say they have good moments together, but nothing compared to what she had with Tony back in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I don't think that she ever fully committed. I think she got caught in this Ireland vortex where...
I totally agree.
And with Jim Farrell, mm-hmm. it was easy to fall into this. Mm-hmm. And she respected him as a person. Obviously, being together with him, mm-hmm. you know, they would have had a good life together, I think. But I think that's where everybody was pushing her to go, where she really didn't
want
to.
Well, yeah, clearly, because somebody else set up the date. You know, your mom kept hinting at...
So he ends up just being almost... like the tragic hero, because he's a good guy.
Sure.
Ultimately, he's a good guy, and mm-hmm. you can feel like, you know, that's a bummer. But we, as an audience, all right, I as an audience member, I wanted Eilish to go back home. I wanted her with Tony, and it wasn't so, like, she made the right decision. Had she stayed in Ireland, like we said, I would have understood it, mm-hmm. and not that Jim would have mistreated Eilish at all, but her life is in Brooklyn.
I don't disagree. I'm just saying it's a missed opportunity to not have your main character explain those actions and have her go through the emotion of that.
Interesting.
I think it's a missed opportunity.
And I think it's like half and half. I think that you listed two mm-hmm. times. One with Domhnall Gleeson's character and once with the letters mm-hmm. referring to Tony.
Right.
I think that for me, I did at some point want to see not an apology to Tony, but some sort of I don't know, explanation towards him mm-hmm. for, like, where she had been or, like, I'm coming home or something. Mm-hmm. For the Dom... For
the, Jim Farrell's
Dom. Jim Farrell's character, I didn't have as much because of where we were in the timeline of the mm-hmm. movie. I didn't need to spend any more time with him.
Oh, poor Jim.
I just think it would have been a really brutal scene. It could have been a mm-hmm. wonderfully
But I also didn't want her to have that... Because I think if you had had that scene, mm-hmm. that would have been one of the most heightened scenes in the entire movie. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't want her most heightened scene to be with him.
Yeah, and it could have turned the audience to go, maybe going back to Tony's not the best idea. If they had it so brutal, like, I don't know. I felt that the way that it was handled, it gives both of those characters, both Jim and Ailish, like, you know, Ailish comes to her senses finally and says, you know what, I got a life back home. I got a husband. I can't get wrapped up in this. Mm-hmm. And Jim is going to be far better off without her.
I just personally like it when your biggest heightened scenes
right.
are between the characters you care about most.
No, I agree with that.
So that's normally like with either the protagonist and antagonist.
It didn't lessen you in her eyes at all, and then your eyes at all, because she wrote him on the didn't have the decency to face the guy?
I was already kind of...
She had to get out of
I was
Dodge.
Already a little yeah. bit... Yeah.
Kind,
I was already a little kind of there, because I didn't yeah. like that
Miss
she was
Kelly
doing
kind
that
of, like,
in general.
Right.
But that's my disagreement.
That's what, that,
like, it, I understand
By having that scene, it would raise... It would move
yeah,
her in a different direction.
Yeah, but I still stand by, like, I want the most... I like the most intense scenes to be with the characters I like most or mm-hmm. care about most or dislike most. Mm-hmm. And for what Jim Farrell's character was, mm-hmm. I didn't care about him enough to want him to be in one of those yeah. scenes.
Well, the only thing is, for a movie that for doesn't have a lot of intense scenes, for me it was missing because it was kind of like... That's why I said poetry.
Yeah.
It just kind of rides like this, and I'm going, give me something...
Yeah.
And I just missed those things.
Interesting. You know, and you know, we can talk again. I felt that acting wise, listen, Domhnall Gleeson. We can talk about him for a mm-hmm. little bit since we're talking about his character, Jim Farrell. This guy, this year, Ex Machina. He's in Resonance,
Star Wars.
Yeah. And
not a bad
movie,
year.
Not
I think
a bad
he's
year
doing
at
good.
All. Not a bad year. Just
it,
a little bit.
At least if you can. Not a bad year.
And
both in Ex Machina.
Yeah. And you know, when you look at him in Revenant,
yeah.
compared to what he looks like here, to how he is in Ex Machina, you know, he's in that movie, what was it called, with Rachel McAdams, About Time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
About Time, right?
Great.
Another nice, sweet, romantic, sci-fi movie. This guy is being poised. I was surprised he may not have got... He didn't get nominated for, say, Revenant. He's really good. And obviously, he's chewing up the scenery in Force Awakens. Looks like he's having a great time there. But when you see him in a movie like this, where he's playing a romantic guy, and he's likable. Like, they could have made this guy not likable, but there needed to be conflict. Like, I need to make a decision, because if I stay here, I'm going to have a great life with this guy, because he's a good guy.
Mm-hmm. Good guy, nice house. He's got
a good job. Money. He's got a good job. But I'm just looking at his career from this past year, and man, he's just like you said, he's having a good year. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Hope to see more of him.
Yeah, I mean, I actually didn't recognize him as much when he was introduced there in the car ride,
right.
And I was like, is it him? Is it him? And they kept, like, kind of shifting the angle on me. I was like, can you just give me a straight shot, please? And then it was him, and I was like, interesting. And I thought they could have really... The good news about him as an actor in this year is I didn't know exactly which direction they were going to take him. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if he was going to be the good guy or the rugby jerk that she got stuck mm-hmm. on a date with.
Right.
And I think that sometimes when you get an actor whose face you recognize, it gives away a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
It sometimes gives away what their character does, if they're good, if they're bad, if they're going to live through the whole film,
right.
if they're going to be in multiple scenes, just because of the weight that the actor holds. And I liked that when they brought him on board, I didn't know what they were going to do with him. Mm-hmm. I knew that he was probably going to be in more than one scene, but I didn't know what
and
it
I thought
was,
the way
the component was going to be.
The movie laid out when she goes back to Ireland and she meets him, and it's very subtle in how each time she slowly gets more and more pulled back to Ireland. Oh, help us out because they need help with the business, and you know how to do this. You have it. Oh, and the boss basically says, no, well, let's talk.
We'll talk.
Well, I'm going, but yeah, we'll talk.
We'll talk.
Everything just suddenly, and my audience is going, no. So the whole time that's happening, even with Jim, everybody's going, well, I can kind of see why she... No, don't!
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, and I think that was the great thing with Jim, is that he was equally as good as Tony. That it would cause that internal struggle within her to be like, oh, I don't know which way to go.
Yeah. I don't know if he was... Tony had a great charm to him as well. I'm not sure if he was
like, Jim was comfortable.
But Jim was comfortable.
And safe.
Tony was special.
Tony was smart and unknown.
But Tony, we saw more of his
exciting personality,
too, because he would say situations that happened to him. He was just in sewer water. Mm-hmm. and then, but he's, like, happy as a clam.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We got... Just the audience was established more, like, how he treats life and whatnot.
And, I think it really sets it up really well. You're going to go back to Ireland. Yeah, are you okay with that? Well, I'm scared. Because Tony knew what he was going to be up at, what he was going to be, quote unquote, competing with in a sense. Cause, and he even says, it's home. It's like, he's like, of course, my guy. I am. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's home. I understand that. Like, you know, if he was taken out of Brooklyn and he had the opportunity to go, like, he understood that he had the wherewithal. And that's what makes going
get
back
locked
to
up, put a ring on it.
Yeah. And so, it's one of those things where she's back in Ireland as the temptation. Mm-hmm. And you would understand the temptation that you can so easily fall into that. Where I think the movie really works is when your audience is going, like, no, what are you doing? Even though it could have been the best. A good decision. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you understand it. But we all were rooting for her to go back to Tony. And it ends in such a great note.
And that, I think, goes a lot to Emery's performance of Tony, which I found to be the most endearing, I think, character in the film. Mm-hmm. And it was he brought such, like, a joy, and also it always felt like he was taking risks with her. Mm-hmm. Like, everything seemed to, like, matter. Like, every time he was revealing something to her, or bringing her home, or telling her he loved her, like, it always just, it felt like a happy risk. And it was very endearing to watch.
And they all were risks, because he says, I love you too quick. He, you know, invites her over to the house to meet the parents too quickly. He says, let's get married too quick. It's all too fast.
I say I love you almost is always too fast in movies, but normally it doesn't feel like it. Normally the character's just like, I love you, and this is destined to be, and we're going to be together forever. And there's, like, no doubt of it involved. And in this one, you actually saw someone who's like, yep, we're saying this quickly.
And when she doesn't say anything, too, it becomes that uncomfortable moment. Mm-hmm. But again, I think it was just handled with such sensitivity that it was part of the process. It was part of the romantic process. Mm-hmm. So that when she finally has her conversation with him about that, again, another great scene.
Still doesn't say it, but I might.
I like the fact that Tony even allowed her the time to actually, you know, have that validity. It's like, yes, I do feel the same way about you. That he wasn't the one pressuring her.
Right.
Whereas, would we get that from Jim? I'm not sure. Would we feel anything from Jim if he said, I love you to her?
Right.
True.
I don't think so.
Yeah. I don't disagree. What do you think, John? It's a good question.
Well, what I was flashing on, I don't know if this answers the question, but what I was flashing on as you were saying that, it was the families, the two family dinners, meaning when she goes and has dinner with his family, and then when she also has dinner with Domhnall Gleeson's family. I just thought
tea or whatever it was.
Yeah, the point is the families get together, and just the difference of that. I don't know why that made me flash on that, but that's where I went.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, it sets up that there's nothing wrong with Jim, but there's something special about Tony.
That's what I think is so seductive about the home is that there's nothing wrong with him. If everything says this should work,
right?
But there's nothing. And of course, there's also the fact that you're already married. Take that out of the equation for a second. There, for all intents and purposes, my home, and that everything's working out. And, And if they had not gotten married, what would she have done?
Yeah.
And that was an actually point I was thinking about. I was like, well, what if they had eliminated the marriage thing? Like, how would I feel? And I think that the only thing it would have changed for me, like, I would still absolutely have wanted her to go back to Brooklyn. That in no way would have changed. What have changed for me is that, as I said, when she was developing this connection with Jim, I kind of frowned upon it and frowned upon her in a way where I was like,
I think you're supposed to. Yeah.
I did.
Yeah. I was like, hey, you know.
You're married.
She was keeping that secret. Yeah. And to me, that was her. That was part of her inner struggle.
Right. And her lies of omission because she didn't tell anybody.
Yeah. So.
And I think that's also just the establishment of the people that she was surrounded by.
Sure.
Where, like, the people in Ireland judged her and whatnot and mocked her in some ways. It's like, how can you live this lifestyle in Brooklyn?
Right.
What we had here. And then she even had the line. She's like, I've forgotten how petty, like, petty you guys are.
Yeah,
and then,
like,
compared to everyone else that we saw in Brooklyn who was always supporting her and no matter what she did. Granted, we get laughs here and there, but it was always out of, like, comfort and love.
Yeah.
So it's maybe, had you take the marriage factor out, it's also maybe the people you're just surrounded by.
Yeah,
who do you want to be with?
You're right. And she could have had that comfortable life, but it's that shop owner. Mm-hmm. Who brings her up? Miss Kelly. Mm-hmm. Only to not
knock her down.
Things. Yeah, only to like knock her down
to lord it over her. To,
and it's like, you know what? Like, thank you for
your life is that
me
small that you want to.
Yeah.
But like, as small as I can be, and you know what? You're not going to have any more. You don't have any power over me. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to go. And I can understand why she. The only person she confided with was the person who died, which was her sister, because she had written in the letters that she had met this man, and you know she had an unfortunate passing. But again, her sister could have thrived in Brooklyn. She had that positive attitude.
Yeah, and was much more of a risk taker. If it wasn't for Rose, you know, Iris would have never gone because Rose is the one that set up the job, the
sponsorship, and everything.
She set the whole thing.
And I want to bring up again the characters in this movie. From the moment she gets on that boat, she meets, you know, this blonde woman who I thought, again, I'm like, who is this actress? I go, she's fantastic.
Love
I was
her.
Hoping to see her through the rest of the movie. Yeah. And I was, but again, the second time I saw the movie, I'm like, she played such an important part to her development, in a sense, that they build this friendship or this bond, I should say, on the boat. You know, because you get those two other idiots hogging up the toilet. So that when she's going back to Ireland, she takes on that mentorship role, or she's going back to the States.
Right.
She takes that mentorship role on to somebody, and once they get to Ellis Island, they separate. Mm-hmm. But her housemates, too. Her housemates at that were so fun and amazing. And one of them comes from freaking Arrow! Like, the girl from Emily Brett Rickards. She's in Arrow. And I was like, holy cow, good for her. She's amazing in this movie. But that scene where they're teaching her to twirl spaghetti.
Splash. Well, for me, it was like they didn't carry on the same actress from the boat, but they kind of carried on her spirit in different actresses. Mm-hmm. And so that carried through for me. Like, I didn't need to see her again because that kind of space was filled by someone throughout the whole film, whether it be her on the actual boat or the housemates or the kind of higher up at the shop. Mm-hmm. It's like it put together Americanized, you take to be like single woman who is little, has the makeup on, is poised and is teaching her or kind of guiding her through this new world. So I liked that it wasn't the same actress and it wasn't our normal, like, this is your guide through the whole film, but you could see her represented in different areas or like that essence.
And I'm not even sure we got a name from that character on the boat.
I don't think so either.
I don't remember.
But then, third of all, we also had Julie Walters. Hello.
Yeah.
I mean, Mrs. The
Americanized version of the bakery owner.
Absolutely. Like, for the little amount of time she was on screen, I thought she was great. I mean, she's such a fast
like
speaker
and
delivered
scenes.
Like eight lines and that was it.
She was amazing.
But like having another strong female character for her in her life as a role model, that was still very positive and helped her along in how to like get accumulated assimilated. Acclimated. Yes, acclimated. I mixed those
Something
words.
Like that.
Assimilated to the new world of Brooklyn. Like, mm-hmm. I think she was also a great positive woman in her life that didn't judge her helped her along.
Absolutely. But
that's what she needed.
But again, I think another wonderful scene.
And at times did judge her. She's just different.
Yeah, but
I understand what you're saying. I just loved her character was a prude who hates prudes and somebody who hates gossip who gossips. You know,
right.
But she was also very religious as well.
Absolutely.
Because every prayer they mentioned God.
Yes, yeah, and I loved, but I loved
who
the scene.
Who hates religious snobs? I mean, yeah. It was hysterical.
But I did love, again, after that wonderful scene in the passing out the food,
right.
When they go back to the house, she's like, come have a drink with me.
Oh, sure.
And
you've
sitting
earned it.
Down, yeah. And yeah, but it was just a nice scene. It was a great bonding moment. And I loved it. And then you get the character of Rose as well, the other boarding member who she was sharing the bathroom with, and they were talking about marriage.
Wait, Rose is her sister.
Rose is the sister.
Rose is the sister.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. But she has that one scene in the bathroom about why are you married again? Is that
why? Would
you marry again? Yeah, that's a good
scene. That was like a really nice
scene. Great little moment.
And it was a great little moment.
Mm-hmm. And I thought every dinner scene was great. Eight of them or whatever the hell, however many one. I just thought they were hysterical. I could have hung out with that even more.
Yeah.
As
unlikable as those women were individually, they played a great part in Eilish's life.
With her housemates?
Yeah, all the women that she was with.
So. Yeah, I thought that those women, I thought that they ended up being, they were great. I mean, she's the new girl in the thing, so she doesn't know really the lay of the land. So, you know, once she decides to take that girl to the dance and she's like, oh my god, this is a big mistake. And when her two friends come in, she's like, I gotta go. And she's like, oh my god, this girl is impossible. Like, you were right.
I felt so bad for that girl.
I sort of did too.
I felt so bad.
But she had it coming to her. Like,
she had it coming. So bad.
She had it coming.
She didn't do anything. She was just.
Yeah,
she was trying to.
She was trying. She was just awkward.
Sort of jerky. But, I loved it for those small little scenes. Even the scene at the dance and being asked to dance was great. Walking out, it was really good. It's hard for me. It was.
We have
really
a lot of praises for this movie.
Yeah, it's definitely it makes my top five.
I have to say, it's really hard. You know, as I was talking to people, it's hard not to like it, and it's hard to dislike it for sure. Because like, what can you dislike about it? But it's so. It tugs on so many things that you just kind of go, you kind of fall in love with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with the criticism. Not a lot happens. I go, you're right. Not a lot happens. Pretty small story. Not a lot happens.
I'm interested in what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes simplicity.
I'm interested in the little things
simple
that happen.
Simple things are the best.
Yeah. Like, a lot of things happen to her. She doesn't push the energy and go, that's the kind of movie it is. That's what it is.
I mean, just to say the argument for that is, you can have a movie where, the whole city is collapsing.
Right. Yeah.
But, like, if I don't care about the characters, I don't care if the city is collapsing.
I agree.
And I cared about this character, so I cared if she splashed the pasta. Like, that's not something that's happening. It's not a huge plot, mover. Mm-hmm. But I care about it, and I'd rather have a movie where I care about something little than I don't care about the whole world collapsing and killing.
But I think that's why people like it more than that, because it's more lyrical than the craziness of other movies. It doesn't have that. That's one of the reasons why I appreciate it. It's this story of this gal.
And it takes its time telling it. You get engrossed. You get brought into this film. Even the scene with choosing the right bathing suit. And she gets, she gets Miss Fortini, Jessica Paré to help. Like, she goes, this won't do. Oh, and you'll have to. This is going to, what are you going to? And then, all right, so she picks the bathing suit. And you're like, okay, great. And then when they go to the beach, it's like, you don't have it on, but you're not wearing it. And and the other great thing was,
you need to
wear sunglasses because, that's the thing right now. So when she's in Ireland, she has sunglasses on, and nobody else has them on. It's like,
looks so glamorous.
Yeah, so glamorous. I got sunglasses on. So, and when they're in Coney Island, again, another little nostalgia thing, but it was such a great scene. It was such a nice scene.
I love the difference of the beaches in Coney Island. It's so crowded, and Ireland is nobody.
Well, there's nobody.
But even, like, the crowdedness, there was more happiness to it. It was brighter. It was more lively compared to what was practically dead at the island.
Yeah, beach. I was wondering, where's the crowd? And even though it was supposed to be summer, I was like, it just looks cold there. And then, but I come to find out that they actually filmed that scene in the winter. So it really was, it was cold there, but it looked it. It was such, such a different, such a schism from Coney Island.
Yeah.
And then you're hearing, well, they're not beach people in Ireland, huh?
It still looked cold. The colors are so saturated back in Ireland.
Yeah.
The second time. First time, not so much.
Speaking of color, I thought that reflective in the wardrobe and the colors presented, they did a really nice job of the transition. Fun. Like she starts in the more dreary colors of how they portrayed Ireland, and by the end she's wearing this bright yellow back to Ireland. Like, it was reflective in her clothes, I thought, in how they portrayed everything. It was very interesting to look at, I felt, as a movie.
I thought, also, on top of the wardrobe, just the actual cinematography of it. You know, we had drab, dreary, saturated Ireland compared to bright Brooklyn, which was more warmer tone colors. And especially the moment when she walked from the Ellis Island through the gate, she goes into it like pearly white light into heaven.
I love that shot. I thought it was, I love that they slowed it down.
Absolutely. And it just establishes that this is the better place to be.
You know, it's funny, too, because regarding the costuming, you know, the costumer, you know, talks about color, and I'm I'm just trying to find what the costumer's name is.
Oh, Dix Moreau.
Dix Moreau. Yeah. And she talks about, like, you know, there was a big difference between 50s clothes of Britain and Ireland than what they were wearing in America. And we met with production, talked about it. If you were coming from Ireland at this time, what would strike you the most? Well, the colors, she said. And when she was talking about, it was also much non-color, black and white, cream ivory, which Saoirse looks lovely in as well. Mm-hmm. And she did. And there was a conscious decision when she was working in the
department store.
Yeah,
it was the Italian place, whatever.
Yeah, I don't remember
Bertucci's or something.
Bartoni,
whatever it is.
And you know, and she was like, "Well, you know, where Eilish works, whether she'd wear a uniform or not." And I remember working in a similar kind of shop where you had to wear a certain kind of costume. We decided to go black was a good way of doing that in store. And they all wore black, even Miss Fortini.
Yeah.
But she stood out. Like, you could tell that Miss Fortini was the boss. Like, there wasn't... Like,
just the way she was standing.
Just the way she was standing.
The cuts of her clothes were a little harsher, I believe.
I'll defer to you on that.
I'm pretty sure, if I don't remember.
Say that again.
When you looked at Eilish, like, she had, like, the white frills, and everything was, like, very, very covered, versus Miss Fortini sometimes had just, like, sharper lines, and not as much white or frills, like, at least in what I noticed every time she was on.
So, the yellow dress was
everybody's
a happy accident.
Yeah. Oh, really?
It was a happy accident. The yellow dress has a little story. Initial fitting with Saoirse in London in the costume house, and a good deal of clothes from both Britain and America. But they found the yellow dress in a shop in Montreal, of all places. And it reminded me of a dress my mother had worn that was very structured in 50s. And so that was it. So it's just going through a shop. It's like, wow, that's perfect. And it fit on her very well. Again, Ireland, pale skin, certain colors are not going to work. You had to make sure that she shined. Especially her eyes, and I think whatever costume, and it didn't color.
And did you read the DP? I think it was the DP, Eve Ballinger. He used lanterns just for her eyes
to sparkle her eyes.
Yeah,
and I don't know how common that is, but I had heard that. I said, whoa! This guy, they really wanted it, and it worked because her eyes certainly. A lot of people were talking about her eyes
and she actually and Saoirse had say in what she wore in the final scene. She picked that skirt and she goes, "Hey, I want to wear that," and it seemed to work very well. So, we talk about collaborative effort in this movie, and I think that there was much going on.
We were talking a little bit about we were shot in Ireland and the color and stuff. I really appreciated that the opening in Ireland and we were talking about how it's not as colorful and it wasn't, but they used much more green in it, which obviously, why wouldn't you go in Ireland? But when you come back to Ireland, when she's back there, it did look, certainly was heightened. It looked way more Hollywood when she, especially she did, what she was wearing and the, you know, that blue dress she had on. She looked, and when she did put the sunglasses on, I mean, she did look a lot more glamorous when she came back.
Absolutely. So
it was a clear distinction.
Yeah.
And it was good to see. It was fun. I liked the way, I appreciated the way they did it visually.
Yeah. And it is funny, you had mentioned Montreal. They actually did sneak in 2 days of filming in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
But 2 days only because of their production budget.
Exactly. I mean, and the budget was
like 10 11.
Mil.
Yeah.
That's not a lot.
No. What? Yeah. And
10 mil was what you said. What
it was like 11 million, but they had 13 investors, 13 different companies investing into this.
That's so weird.
Movie.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
No one does that.
No, like, I'm just like shocked. I would have, if you had made me guess, I would have been like, two, three? One for like
2 million, or you mean two investors?
Investors.
Okay, got it.
Investors.
Yeah.
Especially when you're talking about $11 million,
right.
And like that's very interesting and kind of strange.
It you know, basically because there ended up being 13 different financing companies in total. It was very important we all work together at the end of the day. That's what's best for the film.
How do you get that? Because, like you said, two,
everyone's
three,
opinions.
You get 13. Yeah, geez, for crying out loud.
Everyone's opinions. Everyone who has to like approve that, like sees it, has. Oh my gosh!
And then it was reported they started filming in April 2014.
Well, here's the breakdown of this.
That's crazy.
There were 13 different financier partners, which meant 13 different lawyers.
Yeah, exactly.
That should say a lot. We had daily phone calls with at least 16 people for the 3 months of business prep. Mm-hmm. If it weren't for Finola's lawyer, who is very calm and disciplined throughout the process, the film might have fallen apart.
You could see.
It sounds like a headache.
And they shot, so it's 2014 when they started filming it. They had 8 weeks of shooting, I guess, 15 weeks of editing, which was surprising. And then it premiered in Sundance in January 2015.
Yeah,
and was in a huge bidding war. And who's it? Who won? Fox Searchlight.
Fox Searchlight.
Yeah, they were in competition with the Weinstein Company and who else? A couple other people. I can't remember. But so they won the rights or earned the rights. They bought the rights for $9 million.
Right.
Which is one of the largest out of coming out of Sundance. But what was surprising to me is it only opened in November.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So, that's just how long that took. Plus 13 entities involved. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
That just seems like a long process for an indie.
Yeah, and even like the Ireland Film Commission was one of the things, which is really interesting because I recently saw Room, which also was heavily funded by the Irish as well. So they, they're the new China, I guess.
okay.
But I just find, and you're right. When you're talking about a $10, $11 million budget.
Right,
Look, it's a beautiful movie. They took advantage of what they had, and it was beautiful. Like, I couldn't tell.
I didn't think, I was thinking
speaking
$10 million seems nothing these days.
Speaking to Foxlight and the bidding war that happened over that, do you guys think that was because they really, and based on the fact they released it in November, they bought it thinking like this was going to be a huge awards.
Well, because it got standing ovation at Sundance. So they knew, this is going to be a deal. So and it's not really a summer movie.
It's not a summer movie. It's I understand it, but I almost think that they for the hype around it and for how many people were involved in it, I think they probably expected to have a few more nominations than they actually do.
I don't disagree. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, it's the movie is such a slow burn that I think it's also a slow burn in finding its audience too, because the title doesn't really tell you much, and unless you're going to art house type movies like where you may see the trailer, it's tough. It's a tough movie to market as well, I think. And I'm afraid I'm going to bungle her name, but Saoirse Ronan, again, is not necessarily, number one, I'm having a hard time saying her name. Not that that should go against her, but people aren't, they're just familiarizing themselves with her. And
she's
Rooney
not
Mara
a known name yet.
Was supposed to be.
Rooney Mara,
Rooney Mara
was supposed to have the role and she dropped out. So I found it extremely interesting to go with Saoirse Ronan on this. But again, I think the role was tailor-made for her.
Yeah. Well, yeah. she was too young in the beginning.
Yeah, and she personally connected to this because she was going through the exact same thing, leaving her family from Ireland. And so she connected just to the character in and of itself at the time they were filming. So it meant more to her.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm very glad that they cast her. I think she did an excellent job. And it's one of those things that I'm like, I don't know who else I could picture doing it besides her now that she's done it. But I look at it, and when this year, Brooklyn had a lot of talk, Spotlight had a lot of talk, Carol before it came out, Danish Girl, like all these movies had people just like pushing them, saying they did wonderful in festival runs, like saying that these were the Oscar contenders. Mm-hmm. And as it's turned out, at least when it comes to specifically, like, a lot of the acting roles, they're not being as nominated as I think people thought that they were going to be.
Right.
Like,
the only acting has gone to her and in terms of Julie Walters from this. She's been nominated for Schuster has been nominated for everything. BAFTA, Golden Globe, Critics' Choice, Oscar, just kinds of everything. Julie Walters just won a nominee for a BAFTA, but I don't think she won.
But it's just an interesting kind of thing to me.
They haven't done a big part.
Yeah, I don't know when. Sorry. I'm like, I can't report on the BAFTAs.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
But it is surprising because everybody was ranting and raving.
But it's not just about the nominations. Granted that, that kind of gauges the audience what we should be watching and who we should be rooting for, but also just this movie's getting high praise in and of itself.
Mm-hmm. It did get Best Picture nomination, correct?
Yeah, Picture, Screenplay, and Actress.
And I think slots, only eight got nominated this year, correct?
I'm sorry?
I think only eight of the 10 slots are filled.
Yeah.
We won't go into that. But, look, for me anyways, it definitely goes in the top five. And we were talking about the cinematography. We even talked about how Ireland at the beginning of the movie to the Ireland that she goes back to after being in Brooklyn, and it was purposely shot different because she's a changed woman herself.
And she's seeing it differently.
She's seeing it, much differently than she's changed. And I think, too, the going back to Ireland shows that as well. It was a beautiful film to look at, whether it was a small moment or whether it was a nice close-up or whether it was in a flop house handing out food to people. Mm-hmm. That scene works because of many things. Acting, the music, and the way that it was shot and what they chose to focus on. But I feel that way for the whole movie. The Italian dinner was shot in a way that was very inviting, appealing. I felt like having pasta. I wanted spaghetti.
Well, I don't know if we had already talked about it or I talked to Winnie about it before. But there's just the scene with the bakery owner. I can't remember her name. The witch.
The witch.
When we actually see her home. They were deciding on how they were going to production design, what they were going to do and everything like that. And they finally just came to the conclusion, well, she's just a witch. She really is a witch. Let's just do it up like a witch. And so that's why they designed it the way they did with all those crazy things and everything. I didn't really notice that, but I went back and I went, oh, I get it. But
interesting.
It has that effect. She's just let's go for it.
She's just
a witch. That's why they designed it the way she did. All right, what else haven't we talked about?
Money,
yeah. We already talked about budget. So how's it doing, Dimitri?
It's doing okay. I mean, nothing.
What's it, 31 doing, worldwide, something like that? 31 million worldwide?
Yeah, well, I have a current tally. It's about 22 worldwide. 20. So it'll say 25 unless something happened between yesterday and today when I was doing my notes.
All right.
I was looking at, am I off?
Why as of January 14th, the 30.6 worldwide. That's what I have.
Okay.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Well, let's look. Look.
Yeah.
High praise.
Well, it's getting amazing praise. I think what's amazing is that I want audiences to find it more here. Mm-hmm. Internationally, I can understand. I just want audiences. You're right. I think with
it's 21
praise,
million U.S. Is that what you're saying? Maybe that's what you're saying.
I was just about to go into it.
But yeah.
I just wish that if it had gotten more nominations, that word of mouth gets out there. I mean, it's a beautiful film. Mm-hmm. And top five, like I said, for me, it lands in my top five very easily. And there aren't many films like this.
Can I know what your top five is? Is that okay? Like, I just want to know.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, Star Wars for me is my favorite movie of this year. Mm-hmm. It's my movie. Spotlight. Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I want to go Ex Machina.
Okay.
And I was a really big fan. I enjoyed Mad Max. A lot.
My top
five
is very similar to yours. Very similar to yours. I was just kind of wondering because I was like, tying into the whole nominations mm-hmm. thing and what people favorite are. I think that what's stealing a lot of the thunder right now is The Revenant.
Yeah. Well, and their timing was amazing. They're peaking right now.
Yeah. Honestly. And it's just like, even though the Oscar nods are coming out and Brooklyn has a couple, yeah. not a lot, like, the fact that Revenant came out with, like, 12, anyone who hasn't seen Oscar contenders, that becomes the front of their list.
Right.
And when Brooklyn and or movies like Carol, like, they don't have as many, so to get to them kind of on your Oscar roster takes a while. That's why I kind of want to know your top five was, because a lot of people I've been talking to, as much as The Revenant's getting praise, it's not making a lot of people's top five for the year. At least in a lot of my friends, I'm sure. Yeah.
I think that's actually true. I think that really it's all, they just have to be peaking at the right time.
And you're right, yeah. It's 22.9 domestic here. So, yeah, and Revenant, I won't talk about that. I mean, Brooklyn just left me with a feeling that when I walked out of the theater, for a love story, which is essentially a simple love story, yeah. But it has so much nuance to it, and the way that it's shot is just beautiful. I think a lot should be said for that, mm-hmm. because we are very lacking in a good romantic movie. Yeah. So, in this
again, the way it was shot, Yves Bolliger, I think, I'm not sure how to pronounce that that gentleman's name as well, Bollinger,
I think
Bollinger,
we just
whatever
need
it is.
Title
but
this episode.
He did Dallas Buyers Club, which I was
yeah,
at.
He worked with, with him a lot. He did The Wild.
Almost all of it with practical lighting, right. And then to see him do it, this one, I was like, wow, this guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he says the camera really thinks exactly like me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lucky you.
Lucky, I know.
Exactly.
He has a really good eye, and you're right.
And apparently can work very fast and very cheaply.
Yeah, which is fantastic. I think it's, it's a good testament to him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm impressed with the $10 million budget, and they did such mm-hmm. a nice job. I really am.
I am, too.
Yeah.
So. Absolutely.
And again, just going back, it's timing of release. How it was filmed, we talk about collaborative effort all the time, and this movie there was a collaborative effort. There was a passion behind it from the director, and how did you get involved with this? Oh, I read the story. I can relate to this story. It's a good story, you know, being based off of a book. It's just everybody was willing to put in the work to do this movie for that $10 million budget. Yeah. And I think it works. It really showcases. So in a time we need it too. I think it's nice to have a good movie like this come out where there's not pessimism involved and there isn't the antagonism that you could as easily associate. You could have gone a stereotype on this movie, but you didn't, and you kept it innocent too, which is rare. I think it was a breath of fresh air where they allowed their actors to act.
I liked it.
Yeah.
All right, that seems like final words. Any other last thoughts?
I don't know. I love human characteristic, types of movies where you really can feel for certain people and, like, the relatable storylines. I definitely related to Eilis and how she saw different worlds and how people saw her being affected. And I think it's true. And the good thing about, like, this film, you can watch it at any time. It is timeless in a way. And I think that's what will hold up at the end. Compared to Revenant would be, I'm not going to throw Revenant under the bus, but like other big movies that are being thrown into our face that's only good for like a month, and compared to this one that will actually stand the test of time.
That's very similar to exactly what I was going to say. It's like, it's a lasting movie for me. There's a couple of them this year that I will revisit, and this is the romance one that will really last for me that I've taken away from 2015. I'm very happy I saw it. I think it's going to be easy to recommend to people.
You'll see it again?
I will. I will. I'll see this one again.
You'll cry again?
I have a question I want to throw to the panel, to audience. This movie clocks in at an hour and 51 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, it is, you could argue that it is deliberately paced, but I wasn't bored. Like, I sort of got lost in the pacing.
The only thing I can say about that pacing is, I'm sorry to interrupt, but the if you can just allow yourself to be in the movie and then not worry about it not having huge things happen, then I think it is finely paced. I never felt bored. I felt it was moving along at its clip. Other people saying, well, nothing happened. And if you need a movie that has to have some crazy thing happen every 5 minutes because you need that jolt of adrenaline, then you're going to think, yeah, just too slow.
Yeah.
But, right. I think, and I don't want to say I had any problems with this film. I think what they built, my part when I was watching this, there was a part in the movie where I was like, why is she still in Ireland? Why have so many months passed and she hasn't had connection back to Brooklyn? Mm-hmm. Like, why is she still there? And it was long enough for me to be like frustrated, like, just go back. But it wasn't long enough for me to be bored. It was just like me wanting her right. to just move on.
Which I almost think was done for effect.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you getting back?
But it was
like
done tastefully.
Right.
Yeah. It wasn't boring. Yeah. It was for to actually move the character.
Yeah. Because, you know, the ship ride alone is going to be a couple weeks.
Right. Exactly.
So... All right, Dimitri, did you have any other final thoughts?
No, I think I said everything. Okay, you know how much I love this movie.
Marissa, yeah. Let them know where they can find you.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at SerafiniTV.
At Sarah_Stretton.
Dimitri.
At DMovies1701.
Okay, and check out all the other shows on Popcorn Talk Network. We've got Monday Morning Breakdown. What else have we got?
DC Jedi Alliance, Marvel,
profiles,
action movies.
There you go.
Like,
a full array for your listening
movies.
And viewing pleasure.
Yeah.
All about movies, because at Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
Yes.
Thanks again for joining us. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye, all. Yeah, we didn't even, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.